I'm a new member, ASA, and this is my first meeting, and I'm really happy to be here and appreciate the attention. I'm a member of the group within Monsanto called Agronomic Traits, and we develop traits to put into crops to improve agronomic performance. I'd also like to recognize an academic colleague of mine, Dr. Jeff Vitale, who is an agricultural economist who spent his Peace Corps years in West Africa and has spent most of his professional career working on assessing and improving agriculture in that part of the world. And this is a project that I've had the privilege to be involved in for the last decade or so. So first of all, I'd like to just describe what BT cotton is. It's a cotton that's engineered to express insecticidal proteins isolated from soil bacterium Bacillus thuringiensis. These toxins are families of toxins, and Bacillus thuringiensis is a natural insect pathogen. These proteins are highly specific to relatively narrow groups of insects, very safe to most non-target organisms, most other insects, mammals, etc. And BT formulations based upon fermentation of this microbe have been used for years in agriculture, forestry, and public health. So that's what BT cotton is. What I'd like to talk to you a little bit about today is the project in Burkina Faso. First, I'm going to talk a little bit about the country background, and then the large part on capacity building and BT cotton testing in that country, and then a socioeconomic survey of the first 3 years of commercial release, looking at yield, profits, and health, all based on grower surveys. And this is how they transport goats in Burkina Faso. It's right in the heart of French West Africa. Its formerly colonial name is Upper Volta, for those of you who took geography when I did. It's landlocked, about 17 million people that rely heavily on subsistence agriculture. It's a very poor country. The Human Development Index that Terry showed in his previous talk, Burkina Faso is one of the bottom three dots. And these are some of the reasons it's one of the bottom three dots. But if there's something that works in Burkina Faso, it just might be the cotton industry. They generally grow about 500,000 hectares. Historically, their lint production is about 450 kilograms of lint per hectare, which is roughly half of what yields you would get in the U.S. Again, historically, about 240,000 metric tons of lint are produced every year, and virtually all of that is exported, mostly to Asia. It used to be Europe, but now Asia. And those export dollars account for 60 to 70% of their total export earnings. So as an industry, it pretty much runs the country. Cotton in Burkina Faso can be characterized by small family farms with no mechanization to speak of. 3 million people are involved directly in cotton production. That's 350,000 growers, their families, and casual labor that they hire for weeding and harvest. Significant numbers of people are employed in collateral industries, and that would include ginning, transport of cotton, and also the processing and production of cottonseed oil, which is the major cooking oil for the region. But it's also characterized by heavy use of pesticides, often improperly used and often exposing women and children to pesticide exposure. The cotton industry is what we call vertically integrated. The cotton companies are essentially the one-stop shop where growers go to get seed. It's where they go to get inputs, which include insecticides, fertilizer, etc., and it's also where they go to have their cotton ginned and sold. There are three main companies, the largest of which is Sofitex, which produces seed for the other two smaller companies. And the interesting thing about this and which makes it an attractive partner is the fact that the ownership is roughly a co-op. It's owned roughly in thirds by the government, external investors, private investors, mostly from Europe. But then a third of it is owned by this UNPCB, which is the Burkina Faso Cotton Growers Union. So the growers themselves are well organized in this country, and they have political and economic clout when it comes to decisions about the industry. So how did my company get involved in Burkina Faso? Well, essentially they asked us to become involved. The agriculture minister, with full support of the president and other key politicos, actually approached our chief technology officer and asked if we would help them evaluate this technology for use in their country, in obviously their most important industry. And the things that we had to recognize up front were the challenges associated with that. And most of these challenges were around capacity building. There was no agricultural biotech regulatory structure, so nothing in place to actually assess this technology in country and approve its use. And closely connected to that was limited technical capacity. There were some well-trained, classically trained biologists who are part of the government research, but no one really had a lot of experience in this type of technology. And then, more broadly, limited biotech literacy. Literacy, period, was very limited in Burkina Faso, but the knowledge about just what this technology is and what it might be able to do was very limited. Fortunately for us, and for Burkina Faso, there are a lot of groups, what we call third-party stakeholders, who have a keen interest in improving agricultural development and production in developing world, Africa specifically, and then other groups that are interested in promoting science-based regulatory structures that can assess and promote the proper use of technology. And we utilize these partners. And the first thing I'll mention is the regulatory capacity building. Burkina Faso politically really got in gear, put together a provisional biosafety committee of the appropriate ministers and key scientific advisors. And that was to manage the research, which essentially came out of a formal research agreement between us, Monsanto, and INRA, which is Burkina Faso government's research arm of its agriculture ministry, roughly equivalent to our USDA ARS. The legislature got busy with help from a lot of those third-party capacity-building players and developed a biosafety law. Regulatory agencies, their competent authorities, roughly equivalent to our EPA and USDA, focused solely on biotech, were put together and their responsibilities identified. Biosafety law was completed, ratified by the legislature, signed by the president. So in 2006, a short 2 years, they had gone from no biotech regulatory structure to complete structure with instruments in place for application for commercial release of a biotech product. And just as an aside, this wouldn't have happened without the actual vehicle of the biotech cotton, because this is something the country really needed, and it provided the impetus to get this stuff moving. The technical capacity building, again, with a lot of help from those third-party capacity building partners, lots of training was provided for the scientists and extension personnel, these folks that will actually be working with the technology and teaching farmers how to use it. And then the actual work itself, efficacy, stewardship, environmental safety studies that were done by the Burkina Faso INRA scientists, that was a vehicle for them to build capacity. And that resulted in a number of, this is some of the field work. This is a first confined field trial. And those are some of the INRA scientists. The head of the cotton research is the gentleman kneeling with the blue baseball cap. And then some associated laboratory studies, which resulted in a healthy number of publications co-authored by the local scientists, sometimes fully authored by the local scientists that were published in international journals. Also, part of the work involved getting these appropriate genes into the local germplasm, or the locally adapted cotton varieties. And the Burkina Faso breeders were instrumental in helping us choose the proper families to move forward that exhibited all the agronomic characteristics that they valued, like lint qualities, plant architecture, etc. So we helped each other. And one thing that was really neat about the government in Burkina Faso was this effort to improve biotech literacy by providing what we would call full transparency. Every year they would have these Seeing is Believing seminars where they would invite all the stakeholders you could possibly imagine, to see the stuff in the field and then also sit through data reviews presented by the local scientists that had done the work to see the progress. So we briefly went through some of the challenges and the things that were done to address them, mostly around capacity building. But what were the potential benefits? Well, the BT proteins in this technology for cotton specifically target certain caterpillars, Lepidoptera larvae, which happen to be the key economic pests in Burkina Faso cotton, and by the way, in most cotton grown globally. There's a key set of usual suspects, and they involve mostly caterpillars. And they are also responsible for most of the insecticides used. Roughly two-thirds of the insecticides applied to Burkina Faso cotton, and I would say globally as well, is used to control caterpillar pests. And anything that will improve the cotton industry has the potential to improve the lives of many people because so many are involved in the industry. And these are the usual suspects. I don't know if you can. This is cotton bollworm, old world bollworm. In the US, there's a species very similar to it. This is another one. He's backing out of a bowl there. This is a spiny bollworm on a cotton bud, which is called a square. And I still haven't figured out why it's called a square, because it has three sides. This is a cotton looper and a cotton leaf roller. And that pest complex pretty much constitutes most of the economic damage done to cotton in Burkina Faso. The actual genes that were used to incorporate into the cotton, it's the second generation, and it includes two BT proteins, two separate BT proteins, which increases efficacy of the crop, but also having two separate proteins that actually are attached to specific midgut receptors in the insect also improves its stewardship or long-term durability, because it makes development of resistance less likely when you have two separate modes of action. So early on, the first couple of years, we had not had the genes introgressed into the local germplasm, and we had a small number of research sites at the government stations, and we did it in the U.S. germplasm. So it was not adequately adopted to the region, but we could get some efficacy data. And then in 2006 and 2007, we increased that more broadly, and the BT genes were in the local germplasm, so we got a much better picture of what we thought might happen commercially. The actual studies include efficacy studies, actually looking at the effects on the insect populations in those fields and its ability to protect the plant parts. Economics, input savings, how much could we save on insecticides, effects on yield, and look at total value created. And then environmental safety studies. And you can see the gentleman on the right-hand side there holding up a control or conventional plant, and then in his right hand is the BT cotton plant. Now this is a summary of the first 2 years when the genes were assessed in U.S. germplasm, you can see the caterpillar control was excellent, as was the reduction in damaged fruit. The key points I want to talk about and that I will talk about later are the reduction of pesticide sprays was roughly two-thirds. The average yield gain only over fully sprayed conventional was 15%. And then at the bottom is the additional value created per hectare. That was 30%. And that essentially was the value of that extra yield plus the savings on insecticides. So that additional value created is the total pie, if you will, that is to be divided eventually by all of the risk takers or stakeholders, and that includes the farmers who invested in the technology, Monsanto that provided the technology, and the seed companies who are our licensees for that technology. And we'll get back to the pie later. When the genes were finally introgressed into local germplasm, we saw excellent results again. Again, the first four of a total of six sprays was eliminated, so two-thirds spray reduction, average yield gains between 33 and 45%, additional value created from 40 to 58%. Here's one of our first field trials, and you can see that this cotton has developed a full fruit load, the plants have senesced, and you see all this white cotton. Well, here, the early fruit were destroyed by worms, and the plant is still putting on vegetative growth, trying to produce more fruit, but it's going to run out of water in season very quickly. Actually, for those of you who don't know, cotton is a perennial that is grown like an annual. That's why it'll continue to grow as long as there's water. Now, based upon the strength of those data and additional data, a regulatory dossier was put together and submitted to the regulatory agency in Burkina Faso in August of 2007. Government regulatory approval was granted in June of 2008, and right away, commercial seed production began in Burkina Faso. About 9,000 hectares were planted to produce the seed that would be sold and released more broadly the next year. This is the generation right before that 2008 generation, and this is in Arizona. These are two key Burkina Faso scientists come to look at it in production. In 2009, there was broad commercial release on about 30% of the cotton acres. In 2010 and 2011, that increased to 60%. So what happened? Did the benefits that we predicted through the research actually materialize? Well, these 3 years of data are based on surveys of Burkina Faso growers. And if the growers planted this BT cotton, they reduced their pesticide use by 66 to 100%. They got average yield gains of about 20%. And the growers, part of that pie, the grower increase in net profit per hectare was about $90, which for one of the poorest countries on earth is quite high. The second year, very similar results. The actual profits were close to $90 again. This is Dr. Vitale here, actually on one of his survey trips. And again in 2011, very similar results. So here's the pie. And the blue portion is the grower's part. That's that $90. The red portion is the part that is split between Monsanto, the technology provider, and the local seed company licensee. So if you look at it as the whole pie, all of the blue and part of the red actually stays in Burkina Faso. Monsanto takes home a part of it, and the part that we make is enough to recoup our investment and also keep us engaged in ongoing capacity building efforts to maintain the business. And 2012, 2013, we don't have the full socioeconomic data in yet, but it looks very similar. But the actual output of Burkina Faso cotton increased 60% from 1 year to the next. And if you can remember, I said back historically, the lint output per year was about 250,000 metric tons. Well, now it's increased from 400 to 400,000 metric tons, and this record year has about 630,000 metric tons. So export dollars are increasing. Briefly, I'll discuss some of the health-related questions that were in that survey. 50% of households reported at least one pesticide poisoning incident over the last 6 years. 81% of those reported poisonings were associated with the Caterpillar sprays. They used more toxic chemicals mainly because the less toxic chemicals were no longer working. The insects had developed resistance. So if you project these results out, BT cotton could reduce poisoning cases by about 30,000 incidents a year, which would benefit in terms of decreasing pain and suffering, but also about $1 million in benefits from reduced medical costs and lost wages. And it could also reduce the number of pesticide containers. I don't know if any of you have had involvement in the developing world. I would imagine we have a lot of missionaries in the audience or folks associated with missions. These pesticide containers can be, well, they're toxic. And they just become part of the landscape. And they're used to carry water, hold food. Lots of poisonings result from these. So briefly to summarize, if we look at a 60% adoption rate, which is what we reached those last 2 years of that three, that would account for a $22 million increase in income benefits for local Burkina Faso growers. And then additional money retained locally by the seed companies as part of their profits. Significant reduction in sprays and exposure. And as we've seen, it's a very good vehicle for local regulatory and scientific capacity building. And I think there's plenty of time for questions. So. Yes?
In the research that was done, were there any observations in terms of secondary biological effects? If you kill all the caterpillars, the birds don't have food anymore.
Well, cotton is not the only thing grown. And in these small farms, it's pretty much a matrix. So you go, it's a village-based economy. They grow cotton, but they also grow everything they eat. And most of these pests feed on a broad range of hosts. So I can honestly say there's no danger of eradicating pest populations. Yes?
I was reading recently that resistance to the BT cotton is superior in West Africa. Is that going to be a serious problem?
Well, I'm pretty keyed into this, and I'm not aware of resistance occurring in West Africa. It has occurred in other areas, and there are ways to mediate that, and it's something that we as a company are highly invested in because, you know, if we want to keep living as a company, we have to deal with this, and we have a large group of scientists that are dealing with this. I haven't heard of it in West Africa for this technology. It's occurred for one specific pest in India. But we are, and it's very localized, so we're working on that. So there are areas where part of it involves instances where confirmed resistance has occurred have been in the first generation products that produced a single toxin, and the other components of the insect resistance management plan were not implemented correctly. So you've got the insecticide that's in the plant, and then you also have to plant refuges, which are conventional. Portion of your acres have to go to conventional crops to produce susceptible insects to dilute rare resistance alleles that might pop up out of your BT field. Yeah, so that's part of it. That's more aspects of stewardship that I didn't think I had time to talk about. But by increasing the number of genes in the plant, which is our second and third generations have done, you can actually reduce that refuge size and produce enough susceptibles to maintain very low resistance allele frequencies. So that's all part of the plan, and there are places where resistance has occurred, but it's generally been because the growers didn't plant a refuge or there was something that compromised the refuge. And if you're talking about a poor grower, there's absolutely no reason why a poor grower would want to grow worms. So we're developing new ways to make it kind of seamless, like seed mix refuges, where a small percentage of the seed planted by the grower is a negative, and it actually promotes the growth of susceptible insects. Yes?
On your pie charts, it seemed that the producer share of the pie was increasing over the years. Is there a reason for that?
No, the actual value created was estimated by our early studies, and we thought if and that varies from year to year depending upon the year. So if overall yields are good, the grower might actually make more. Or if pest pressure's high, that portion, more of it will be kept by the grower but it wasn't designed that way. We had a rough estimate of how it might work out. But every year it's changed, and it could be because the growers are actually getting better at using the technology.
So what's in a share? Is there a certain percent of the increased profit, or is there a dollar value?
It's a certain dollar value based upon that total value created estimate. Okay, so if the grower actually grows more, he keeps it. And the way it's worked out is kind of neat. If you look at the pesticide savings, that roughly is equivalent to the technology premium that the farmer pays for that seed. So the cost of cotton production is actually the same for one growing conventional cotton as it is for ours. Ours increases 20%, and that 20% yield is what the farmer takes home. Well, actually, I mean, that is a business relationship. It's a contract relationship, and I'm not allowed to tell you how much. But suffice to say, it's enough to keep us, allow us to make about $12 million a year.
So you can't really show it in terms of percentages?
No, it's a fraction. So the grower pays X. We get a steady fraction of that X, and then the local seed company.
Huh? You can't tell me that fraction, right?
Actually, it's about a third. Okay, I can tell you roughly. It's about a third of the red. So two-thirds of the red stays with the local seed company, and all the blue stays in Burkina Faso. So roughly two-thirds in this last year stays at the farm gate. The,